Chapter 18. A few days passed, and we still hadn't heard back from Josephine. I was worried that she'd gone to the Duchess's and somehow been caught, but thankfully, on the fourth day, a white carriage pulled into our drive. All of my women were inside of the house, and I stood in the gravel next to my hitched wagon and turned to wait for our guest. Right as the elegant carriage pulled to a stop, the door slammed open, a white velvet heel stepped out, and Josephine appeared from inside. Her orange cat-like eyes stayed on the ground for a second, lifted, and then a wide smile curled the corners of her lips.
"Charles! Oh, don't you look dashing this morning?"
"I could say the same of you." Josephine did look prettier than ever before. Her honey-colored blonde hair flowed around her shoulders in loose waves, lifted off her shoulders in a gust of wind, and settled down her back. Her round, childlike cheeks flushed pink at my compliment, and she hurried forward, offered me a hand, and took mine in her own. The young aristocrat wore a long-sleeve orange and white striped dress, with delicate lace around the neckline and sleeves. A wide, white bow was tied around her tiny waist, ruffles flowed out at the hips of her dress, and a golden pendant glittered against her pale, voluptuous chest. Josephine stepped forward. Her pristine white petticoats rustled against the gravel at our feet. Her sensible low heels clicked lightly, and her smooth leather gloves felt almost buttery against my fingertips. "Your dress matches your eyes perfectly."
"Oh, my mother used to call it the color of fire. But when I think of fire, I always picture the blazing hot blue flames, not the muted tangerine of my eyes."
"I think she was right. It is the color of fire. Such a beautiful shade."
"Well, thank you. But I'm sure you're more excited to hear about what I learned from the Duchess than to stand here and admire my eyes all day."
"I would gladly do all that," I chuckled. "But yet, come in. Valerie, Ryan, and Daisy have repeatedly been asking about you. Valerie in particular."
"I'm excited to see them. I've missed them very much. I even brought an overnight bag if I could stay here tonight."
"Of course. I'm sure they'll be overjoyed to hear that."
"Oh? Charles, were you going somewhere?"
Josephine paused for a moment, pointed toward the wagon filled with supplies and the hitched horses, and then turned back to me.
"Well, I'm sorry if I interrupted you. I can come back at another time."
"No, it's quite all right. I just returned home. It's actually funny, and I think we forgot to tell you in all of the tumult of the evening. We caught the nix in your lake. We've been keeping it in a small jar, but Daisy read that they need lots of space to swim. At least 50 gallons of water is the smallest. I just got back from the mercantile with some supplies for it. It won't take me very long to build, so I'll do it later today."
"You caught it? I've been trying to get rid of the pesky nixes for at least a year, and you finally got the last one?"
"Yes. I told you that we use mythical creatures in our experiments, so when we saw it, we captured it for whenever we perform the next one."
"Charles, do you mind if I watch you while you build it? If it's too much of a bother, it's fine. I can either return home or spend some time with your women. But I'd love to watch you work with your hands."
"Nonsense. Of course you can watch. I don't mind."
"Where are you going to build the tank? Down in your laboratory? I've been to the manor a few times, but I'm sad to say I've never seen it for myself."
"I'll show it to you once we're done talking to the others. Not only that, but there's someone down there that's very anxious to meet you."
"Oh? You have someone staying in your laboratory?"
"Well, staying isn't the right word. He lives down there. It's hard to explain. You'll understand when you meet him." I offered Josephine my hand, took hers, hurried up the stairs, and swung the front door open. Bright afternoon sunlight flooded into the drawing room as we passed it, and in the distance I could hear the soft shuffling sounds of my women's feet and their lowered voices. "Ryan? Valerie? Daisy? Josephine is here!" A loud crash reached our ears, a loud giggle, and then Valerie pounded down the hall, with her arms pumping at her sides.
"Here! Oh, we've missed you so, so much!"
The ash blonde bent her knees, rolled across the floor, balanced on all fours, and then launched herself into the air toward the heiress, The aristocrat chuckled, rushed forward, held out her hands, and then caught the flying feline woman in her arms. The heiress wobbled on her feet and almost went down, but I steadied her with my hand. The honey blonde leaned back her head, grunted from the weight of the feline girl, and then parted her lips to speak.
Oh, thank you.
Valerie, get down. You're too heavy for Miss Josephine.
Oh, she's fine. I just wasn't expecting that. See? I'm not too heavy. Josephine can handle it.
The cat girl closed her eyes, rubbed the top of her head against Josephine's cheek, and purred so loudly that it echoed around the small hallway.
Oh, I don't think anyone's ever called me Josie before. My mother used to call me Jo when I was little, but other than that, I've never had any nicknames. Charles calls me Val sometimes. I originally got my name off of this weird long metal thing I found in the laboratory. Valstrom. I loved it so much. But then Charles changed it just a wee bit, and I love it even more. Valstrom? Isn't that a brand of wrenches?
Yes. I'm surprised you've seen it. Most aristocrats have never even seen a wrench, let alone know the names that are written across them.
Oh, I'd like to believe that I'm pretty handy. I enjoy fixing things around the manor whenever I have the chance, but if I can't, that's when I call in one of my workers.
Josephine set down Valerie, patted the feline woman's head, and then turned back toward me. I smiled gently at her, gestured with my arm toward the kitchen door, and then led her in.
Oh, hello, Charles. Josephine is here, too. Hello.
Good afternoon, Miss Browning. What are you making? It smells delicious.
I was baking a few loaves of bread. They should be done in a few hours or so.
Daisy, where's Ryan?
She's in the conservatory.
Ah, perfect. If you'd like to join us, Josephine is going to tell us what she found out from the Duchess.
I can assure you it's not very much. The experience itself was terrifying. But the information she gave me wasn't much more than you found out yourselves.
Daisy brushed off her hands on a towel, set it down on the counter, untied her apron, hung it up on the wall hook, and then followed after us. Behind the small kitchen table, glass double doors led out into the conservatory, and though I didn't spend much time out there, it was one of my favorite places in the manor. Since Ryan's creation, the red-skinned imp woman had taken over the space, planted a few herbs, flowers, and other types of plants out there. The doors opened up into a large, round room. The walls were made entirely out of frosted glass, and they stretched up into a perfect dome over our heads. Dark iron pieces of metal held the glass walls in place, and blooming vines crawled up their lengths. It was warmer in this part of the house, only by a few degrees, and much more humid. Even in the dead of winter, this section of the house stayed as hot as mid-July. Different parts of the room were sectioned off into aisles with even more lush foliage, but directly in the middle of it was a medium-sized table with six chairs. I headed for it, pulled out a chair for Josephine, and then pushed her toward the table once she sat down. Ryan, where are you?
Over here, in the palm section. I'll be right over.
Josephine is back! She's here with news from the Duchess!
Ryan appeared from the left of the room, gloves covering her hands and a pair of shears in her grasp. The red-skinned woman dropped the tool on a small silver cart, pulled off her gloves, brushed off her hands on her legs, smiled, and headed toward us.
I doubt it was a pleasant visit, but I'm anxious to hear what she found out.
I sat down beside Josephine, all of the rest of my women settled in beside us, and then we all turned toward the heiress. The stunning aristocrat cleared her throat, placed her hands on the tabletop, knit her fingers together, and then began to speak.
I visited the Duchess the day after I left here. It's now Tuesday, so I saw her on Sunday morning.
How was she? I asked. Did she seem off?
Yes. At first, she seemed hungover. But the more time I spent with her, she seemed more erratic. She definitely knew that something happened to her, but she told me that she couldn't remember what. She said that she thought it had something to do with you and Lucien, but she couldn't recall anything concrete. I assured her that it must have been a dream, or she must have spoken to you at the party, but she disagreed. I would have come the day I spoke to her or the day after, but I wanted to wait a few days. Why?
Do you have a specific reason?
I wanted to see what the other aristocrats said. So, I spent a few days wandering around town, shopping, having luncheons with Adelia and Liliana, and everyone that I spoke to felt the same. The first 2 days, Edenie walled herself up in the duchy. But after that, she was seen in town utterly disheveled and accusing people of being in on it. I've even heard that she's locked Lucien in the laboratory permanently because she believes that you and him are in cahoots. I also heard a rumor that she attacked a group of male workers in the street, though that couldn't be confirmed or denied.
Really? And all of this is because of the truth serum?
Either that, or a combination of that and her own delusions.
I never expected her to react this way. The Duchess is always so calm and collected no matter what is going on. Do you think that the after effects of the truth serum caused her to lose touch with reality? Or was it something else entirely?
When I saw her, she didn't seem that bad. Yes, she was suspicious of everything I said, but she certainly wasn't delusional or disheveled. She looked as she always does.
So, tell us what she told you.
Well, I sent a courier first, asking if I could join her for tea. She responded almost immediately, at least within an hour after I sent my request. I arrived at her manor later in the afternoon, and everything seemed fine. Her servants opened the gates for me, helped me from the carriage, and opened the front door for me. Edenie greeted me at the top of the stairs, elegantly descended, and then guided me into her drawing room. We spoke for a little bit, and over time I started flexing my power on her. Small things, you see, making her grab the sugar bowl when she meant to grab her cup. She seemed to notice at first, and would furrow her brows, stare at the object in her hands, sigh, and then grab whatever she meant to in the first place. But over time, she stopped. That's the thing about my ability. Once I use it on you a few times, you stop noticing that anything is abnormal. It feels natural.
Did you talk about her plans there, while you were drinking tea?
No. Edenie had other ideas.
What do you mean? I murmured.
Have you heard of the Duchess's trophy room?
Josephine asked. Daisy's brows furrowed. Ryan shook her head, but Valerie and I glanced at each other. The two of us had heard of it, briefly from Milton and his men back in the forest outside of the duchy. Yes, but Ryan and Daisy haven't.
Oh, then I must explain. Everyone knows, but the two of you may not. Poaching around the manors, or poaching at all, is illegal. Not only in Edenheart, but all over the country. Animals are seen as sacred, and because of our powers, they seek us out. No one knows why, but they do. I've known Edenie for most of my life. We're pretty close in age, and we'd have playdates when we were children. No one loves animals as fiercely as the Duchess, and she does everything she can to protect them.
But what does this have to do with her trophy room?
Many men resort to poaching, may it be for food, clothing, or for selling on the black market. I've heard of hunting parties, too, composed entirely of all aristocrats. But I know that Edenie put a stop to them many years ago because it disgusted her. Most men who are caught poaching are executed. It's a heinous crime, and they spend the rest of their short lives in the dungeons because of it. But with Edenie, she takes extreme measures when it comes to poaching.
What does she do?
If they're caught on her property, they're taken inside the depths of the house, strapped down, and then skinned alive, just like the animals would have been if they'd caught anything. The men in these situations die horrible, slow, and agonizing deaths. But that's not the worst of it. Edenie keeps the skins, frames them, and hangs them up on the walls like pieces of art in a museum. For the longest time, I didn't believe the rumors about her trophy room, but I've seen it with my own eyes now.
You saw it? I growled.
She showed it to me willingly. She asked if I wanted to see her most prized possessions, and I agreed. I never in a million years would have thought it was human skins. but I shouldn't have been surprised with the Duchess's depravity. She told me that a lot of people find her installments grotesque, but sometimes you have to do something grotesque and horrifying to protect the things you love.
That's exactly what the warden's men told me, I muttered. You remember that, don't you, Valerie?
Yes. They said that you don't understand the installment the first few times you visit, but over time you start to see what she means. Each of them has nameplates with the date and time they were captured. There are two or three that are laid out across the marble floor like bearskin rugs, and she walks across them as if they were nothing. It was, disgusting. I felt like I was going to vomit the entire time I was down there with her.
Is that where you questioned her? I asked. Down in the trophy room?
Yes. I figured it was the best time. She seemed totally at ease down there, and my powers would go unnoticed.
What did you ask her? I probed.
At first, I reiterated all the questions you asked her at the party. I asked her what she and Lucien were planning, why they were doing it, and how they planned to do it. Then I asked when all of this would take place.
And? I urged.
Edeni said they planned to start testing within the next week. She said that they have to wait until she's ovulating, but they may start sooner than expected. She also mentioned that they gave her some sort of potion or drug that will stimulate her egg production. I didn't understand any of it, but I figured all of the information that I got would be of use to you.
I only know what she means because of my doctoral background and all of the journals I've read, I stated. When she spoke about her eggs, she meant the eggs she will use to create the embryos. Every child born starts as a combined ovum and a spermatozoid, or a sperm cell. Ovulating is the time of the month where the egg drops through a woman's fallopian tubes, rests in the uterus, and then waits for sperm to fertilize it.
Oh, I understand now. Well, I understand what ovulating is, but I've never heard of the term for it.
They're starting next week. Well, that doesn't give us very much time.
Oh, I forced her to show me the laboratory. I even took notes of everything they had in there if you would like to take a look.
Josephine reached into the pocket of her dress, searched around for a second, and then pulled out a small notebook. The blonde aristocrat flipped through the pages, found the right one, stuck her tongue out the corner of her lips, and then handed it over to me. I scanned the page for a second, reading over each of the items. It was clear that Josephine didn't know the technical terms for a lot of the equipment, but each bullet had a short description. "What's this?" I asked. "Oval-shaped tubs with glass coverings with retractable tubing? Do you remember how big they were?"
"Enormous. Large enough for two or three men to lay down side by side. They were filled with this strange neon yellow goo. I went near it, but Edeni warned me not to touch it because it's toxic. Charles, do you have any idea what it could be?"
"It sounds something like an incubator," I stated, "but on a much larger scale. I'm unsure what the liquid inside of it could be."
"Charles, didn't you say that Lucien told you that they're going to inject the embryos with chemicals or special potions made from other alchemists? Maybe that's what the liquid inside the incubators is."
"True. They'll probably put the fertilized egg in the incubator, and the liquid will be absorbed into the amniotic sac."
"I've heard through some other sources that the Duchess has gotten even worse than she was. I heard that she killed one of her workers when he tried to enter her chambers and bring her breakfast. I'm not sure if she's reacting this way because of your serum, her own delusions, my mind control, or a combination of all three factors. She's never been like this before. The Edeni I knew has always been calm and collected, no matter what was happening."
"It might be all of those things together, along with her desperation to kill the queen. When I worked for her, she'd come to the manor in such a blind rage. She was almost unrecognizable from the woman she is out in public."
"What do you think we should do next, Charles?"
"Edeni already thinks that we're involved with this." I cupped my chin. "Even if we weren't, we'd be the first that she'd look into. So I think we should write an anonymous letter that includes the information that we know she committed treason to lure the Duchess to us."
"Are you so sure she will come?"
"She's spiraling out of control," I went on. "She's not in her right mind, and if she receives a letter taunting her with the threat of being found out, she'll immediately assume it's from me."
"Bringing her straight to us?" Brilliant, Charles. Just brilliant.
I'll get right on it. We all know how convincing my letters can be.
What does that mean, Charles?
I'll explain it to you later. I grinned, placed my hand on her shoulder, and gave it a tender squeeze. So we taunt the Duchess, bring her here, and then...
And then? What happens after that? We have to have a plan.
Daisy and Josephine are waiting in the wings, I instructed. I get Edeny to admit to everything. She screams that I don't have proof or anything like that. And then, ta-da, two aristocrats appear out of the shadows.
But what if she attacks? The Duchess is incredibly powerful, and I doubt if we brought all of this to her, she would allow us to live.
You're right, I grunted, cupped my chin, and thought a bit harder. Well, we'll have to figure something out for that.
I might be of some assistance here. I believe that I could neutralize her power while she's here.
You can do that? I asked.
I believe so. I've done it a few times with my mother and other aristocratic women. When I enter into their minds, I can control everything for a few moments. Their thoughts, their words, and more importantly, their powers. I've already entered her mind once before, so I'm sure the Duchess would barely notice that I'm there.
Will it work? I grunted. I want to be sure that it'll work and we won't be blasted with the full force of a lightning bolt.
It will. Here, let me demonstrate. Valerie, try to activate your power. Charles told me it's invisibility, correct? Yep. Here I go.
Valerie's blue eyes fluttered closed and she took a deep breath, but nothing happened. The cat girl grunted under her breath, curled her hands into fists, and puffed out her cheeks. The gorgeous ash-blonde woman's cheeks flushed pink and soft groans escaped her firmly pressed lips. But try as she might, her power never activated.
See? Go ahead and try it again, Valerie. It'll work this time.
The feline woman nodded, clapped her hands in front of her, bowed her head, and then disappeared. Within seconds, the ash blonde came back into view with an enormous grin.
I did it that time! Oh, Josephine, I can't believe you did that! I knew that you could read minds, but I didn't know you could completely neutralize someone's power.
We'll use it on the Duchess, I stated. We lure her here and trick her into admitting that she committed treason. When she tries to lash out, Josephine will knock out her power with her mind control.
And then crash! Boom! Bang! We got her ass!
I'll get to work on writing the letter.
Daisy chuckled, stood from the table, and then leaned across it.
This is so exciting! How many times have aristocrats showed up here and accused us of wrongdoings? It almost feels like this situation is the exact opposite. And I love it so much.
The brunette smiled at each of us, turned, and hurried back into the central part of the house. I swiveled in my seat, took Josephine's hand into mine, and gave it a soft squeeze.
Are you going to build the tank for the Nyx now, Charles?
Yes, I nodded. Josephine wanted to see the laboratory, and I said that I'd enjoy some company down there while building the tank. You're welcome to join us if you'd like.
Maybe a little later. There's a ball of yarn in the library that's just calling my name.
Clean up after yourself when you've finished, please.
Daisy called through the open kitchen door.
I will.
The cat girl grumbled, hopped from her seat, waved to us, and then skipped inside the house. And you, Ryan? I inquired.
I'll probably help Daisy with the letter. I'm still practicing my penmanship, and I hope that one day I'll be able to be as good as Daisy is.
The black-haired beauty stood from the table, patted Josephine on the top of the head, and then hurried out of the room. Shall we head to the laboratory? I smiled. I just have to bring down all of the supplies I bought at the mercantile.
Do you need any help?
The blonde asked, stood from her chair and tilted her head.
I may be an aristocrat, but my arms work perfectly fine.
No, it's quite all right. Come with me. I guided Josephine back into the kitchen, through the hall, into the foyer, and out onto the porch. The two of us hurried down the front steps. I paused at the wagon, grabbed the glass sheeting from the back, held them tightly in my arms, and then nodded toward the side of the house. It's around that way, I smiled. The stairs will be on the left. You can't miss them.
Are you sure you don't need any help? I can carry some of those metal pieces you have in the back. They don't look too heavy.
Sure, as long as you're willing. Josephine nodded, grabbed the metal rods that would be the joints of the tank, held them loosely in her arms, and then followed after me. I stepped down the stairs. The temperature immediately dropped as we neared the laboratory, and I reached for the handle to the door. "I just want you to prepare yourself, all right?" I grunted. "My guest is a little different than most. He won't talk to you, though, but it is a bit shocking for most people."
"I'm a noble, Charles. I've met a lot of different people. I'm sure I can handle whoever is waiting in there for me."
"All right," I snickered. "Don't say I didn't warn you." I swung the corrugated door wide open, gestured with my head for the blonde to enter first, and then stepped in right after.
"Charles," A.B.'s voice cried, "I've been waiting for you all damn day. What took you so long? I heard you speaking to someone outside. Who was it? Hello there."
Josephine paused for a moment, the black metal rods held tightly to her chest. Her orange eyes narrowed, widened, and then her mouth dropped open in surprise.
"Charles, is that a brain?"
"Yep. That's Abraham Benjamin, or A.B. for short."
"Who's a pretty blonde, Charles?"
the brain purred.
"Oh, my, my. I've never seen you before. Come here often. Hang around musty laboratories a lot."
"A.B., this is Josephine. But she can't hear you, so don't try to talk to her."
"Charles, are you talking to the floating brain as if it were a living, breathing person?"
"Well, it's quite difficult to explain," I stated. "I found A.B. in the back of a curio shop a long, long time ago. I wouldn't say I found him. He called out to me, spoke directly into my brain. I'm not sure how I can hear him, but Ryan, Valerie, and Daisy can hear him too, and I'm almost sure that it's something to do with my blood."
"So when I eventually become a monster girl, I'll be able to hear him too?"
"Yes, absolutely," I nodded. "Though I'm not entirely sure you want to be able to hear him. He's a bit of a
comedian,"
the brain called out.
"Lover boy, a handsomely hilarious brain that everyone should love and adore."
"A character. But I'm sure you'll love him." Josephine stepped forward toward A.B.'s tank. Her breath came in and out in short gasps. Her mouth hung open, and when she reached the water-filled container, she pressed her hands against it. For a moment, the golden blonde stared into the bubbling solution and took in all of A.B.'s details with wide eyes. I half expected her to pull away, scream, and run from the room as if I were a madman. But she didn't. The aristocrat knelt down for a closer look, tilted her head, and then turned slightly to look back at me.
"Fascinating. He's gorgeous. I've never seen anything like him before in my life. You said you procured him from a curio shop."
"Gorgeous? Did you hear that, Charles? She loves me! She really, really loves me!"
"Yeah," I chuckled to the blonde woman, set down the glass panes in my hands, grabbed the metal rods from her loose grasp, and began to set up my workstation. He was covered in a thick layer of algae, and he was severely shrunken. I brought him back here, cleansed him, dropped him in some hydrating solution, and brought him back from the brink of death.
"I wouldn't say I was on the brink of death," the brain cried. "I was still hearty and full of gusto."
"Barely," I shook my head.
"And he's fully conscious? He can speak to you and your women? Can he see?"
"He can speak to all of us," I confirmed. "I think he can see, but I'm not entirely sure how, since he doesn't have eyes. He can hear us. Even if we speak aloud or in our heads, he's still capable of replying."
"How strange. But so utterly fantastic. Oh, it's unbelievable. But you've shown me some pretty strange and extraordinary things before, and they are all very real."
Josephine stood up from her crouch, turned toward me again, smiled gently, and then settled herself down onto the wooden stool by my examination table. The heiress glanced over at the metal table, ran a finger across its cool, smooth surface, and then settled in. I smiled over my shoulder at her, brought over the glass panes, dragged the welder across the floor, and got to work on the tank for the Nix. I placed the welder's helmet over my face, switched the welder on, and got to work on the tank for the Nix. I knew in the future, whenever we created our next monster girl, I'd probably have to build a bigger tank for her. But for right now, this would do for the magical beast. First, I welded the metal rods together into the rough framework of the tank, attached a sheet of metal to the bottom, melted that into place, and then began to fit the panes of glass into the framework. I heated the edges of the glass carefully enough not to crack it, and then laid the molten pieces against the metal. Since this was a smaller project and it didn't take me very long, and only after 30 minutes or so, I leaned back on my heels and switched off the welder. "Will you help me lift this onto the stand next to AB's tank?" I asked. "It's solid, but not very heavy. I need to fill it with water, add in a few key nutrients, and then we can place the Nyx within it."
"All right."
Josephine smiled, hopped up from the chair, and hurried over.
"I can do that."
I grabbed one side of it while the aristocrat grabbed the other, and we lifted it together. I smiled gently over at her, shifted the tank a little higher, and together we brought the container over AB. We set it down. I reached for the small length of hose attached to a faucet, placed one end of it into the tank, and switched it on.
"You said that you need to put nutrients into the water. Why is that?"
"Well, most aquatic animals can only survive in certain types of environments," I told her. "So I concocted the nutrients to change the water into the same kind it would have been in your lake. Daisy told me about it. She reads all the books on them and is our resident magical beast specialist." The tank filled quickly, and right before it reached the top, I switched the water off. I bent down, grabbed a small bottle on the shelf underneath the new tank, opened it, and then shook 3 large tablets into my hand. I tossed them into the water, watched them fizz for a moment, and then crossed the room toward the metal box we'd put the Nyx in. I lifted it easily from the ground, heard the soft singing from inside, chuckled under my breath, and brought the box closer. "You may want to stand back a little," I uttered. "I don't want you to get your dress wet."
"Oh, of course."
Josephine shuffled backward a few steps, placed her hands loosely in front of her, and nodded at me to continue. I held the box steadily from underneath with one hand, reached up with my free one, and flipped the lid open. The singing was louder now, but I ignored it, tipped the metal box forward, and sloshed all of the lake water inside the tank.
"Where is it?"
Josephine gasped, hurried forward, and pressed her hands against the tank's glass.
"I knew they were in my lake, but I've never seen one up close."
The bubbles obscured the Nyx from view for a few seconds, but as they settled, the small being slowly came into view. I'd never seen a Nyx either, for that matter. So I crouched down beside the blonde aristocrat and leaned in close to the glass to get a better view. The tiny creature almost looked like a minnow as it cut through the water. But as it changed direction, looped twice, and then burst past the glass, we got a better view of it. The small Nyx looked more like a human than a fish. Maybe what I would imagine a mermaid to look like, but on a much smaller scale. The bottom half of the Nyx was like the tail of a fish, but when it turned again in the water, we saw that instead of a single fin, it had 2 leg-like appendages it used for propulsion. Both of them were covered in brightly colored scales that shifted and changed colors in the light. But the upper half of the Nyx looked like a miniature human, except its skin color was a grayish-green hue.
"Oh, they may be pests, but it's so beautiful. Look at the way it moves. It just glides through the water as if it were flying."
We fell silent for a moment as we watched the freed Nyx explore its new home. When I finally broke away from the trance-like state, I realized that Josephine tightly held my hand in her lap. My heart beat a bit faster, and our faces turned to face each other. The honey blonde's face was illuminated by the changing colors of the Nyx's scales, and I was awestruck by her striking beauty. Her plump lips parted as if she wanted to speak, but quickly closed when she leaned closer. We were inches from each other and on the verge of kissing when a voice from above called down to us.
"Charles, I finished the letter. I've called for a courier, and they'll be here soon to take it to the Duchess."
"You've known the Duchess longer than I have," I stated. "For most of your life, it seems. How long do you think it'll take her before she shows up?"
"Edenie's intelligent. I know that for sure. If she has a hunch about something, she will always follow it, no matter the obstacles in her path. So, if she thinks it's you who sent the letter, she'll appear tomorrow morning, and that's at the latest. But if I know her well enough, she never waits. It'll be tonight. She'll come sometime tonight.